Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of the podcast Edification and Well-Being. Here is your personal physical educator, Juan Baez. Thank you for listening. Today is going to be an awesome episode. Well, I keep saying that, but I've been expecting this conversation for a while, and I'd say it's going to be an awesome one. But before we continue, a little housekeeping here. I made a little addition to the title of the podcast. The podcast is called Edification and Well-Being. And I was always commenting or saying, you know, that the podcast is about learning and education and health in general. But I added to the title of the podcast, and I created a new cover art that says Edification and Well-Being, Science, Learning, and Health, right? And that way, it helps me, it pushes me a little more to find many more areas of science and education and learning and health in general, and come out of my comfort zone and find connections to these things. So that's one thing. Another one is I opened a Patreon website to receive patronage or donations for the podcast. And those who are patrons on the podcast will be having exclusive content that is not necessarily shared here or in my social media. So please visit it and please consider becoming a patron, and I will you will have all of the information of the different tiers and according to what amount of donation what you will be having access to. But it starts like from $1 and up to $15, okay? And that will help tremendously with the podcast, okay? So, and the link for that Patreon website will be down in the description of this episode. Another one is a reminder for you to, if you want to participate or donate to the podcast, and it doesn't necessarily have to be monetary, you can donate research, okay? Or contact me for collaborations to have a conversation in this podcast. So all my contact information and an email where you can find or send research papers or articles that are peer-reviewed and things like that, then you can send it there, and that would be a great donation too. Also a reminder, there is a Spanish version of the podcast. I created this to have a better, a wider reach. I speak Spanish, so why not create a Spanish version instead of just creating a different podcast? I just created a Spanish version of this one. In a sense, it will be a different podcast in the way that I will not necessarily be sharing exactly the same information. I'm sort of like translating some of the podcast episodes that I've done and putting it there. I already have 3 episodes, but I've been contacting, friends of mine who are professionals in different areas in Puerto Rico, and I'm exhorting anybody who is from any, Spanish-speaking country or that speaks Spanish, doesn't matter where you're from, and if you can share, if you are within those professions of or areas of science, learning, and health, to contact me and let's have a conversation in the Spanish one too. Okay, and another thing I wanted to mention is that I am trying to expand my reach for conversations in a podcast, in the sense that I want to be able to meet with people face to face. Okay, part of the fundings that I get from Patreon will be to be able to pay gas and things like that. For the moment, I am opening, well, not necessarily specific spaces, but I am open to travel near where I live. I live in Central Florida, in the United States, and I'm willing to travel to, say, Tampa and Orlando and everything, everywhere in between those two places, to meet with people face to face and have conversations. And one of the reasons is that I've been wanting to do this for a while. Another one is that I've been interviewing or having conversations with people through Skype or through the Anchor app or through Google Hangouts and things like that. But sometimes, for some reasons, the quality of the audio is not the best. And there is sometimes a little feedback, or sometimes the voice sort of like comes and goes. And I mean, generally speaking, the conversations go well and you can understand, but I guess in person to person interview or conversations, will be a little better. And I'm willing to invite you to coffee if you're one of those people. We'll just sit down and have a coffee and maybe even lunch and have a conversation about the things that I explore here in the podcast. Okay? So I am a fan, for today's episode, I am a big fan of sci-fi movies and Japanese animation, especially those where humans and technology end up merging and transcending to a whole new thing, right? And one of my favorite characters is Cyborg from the DC Comics, who was a member of the Teen Titans and then a member of the Justice League. If you don't watch animated cartoons or anything like that, but you've watched the latest Justice League or Batman versus Superman movies, there is a character that's called Cyborg, right? It's a machine man. And this character, after a fatal accident, through the use of technology, alien technology and human technology, he became this super being that is not human, right? Or at least as we think humans to be, nor he is a machine, since he enjoys all of the things that normal humans do. And he's very conscious, just like humans, about the things he does, right? His abilities include like super strength, super speed, flight, technopathy, right? Technopathy is the ability to control and manipulate electronics with the mind. And of course, I don't know if in the future, but in the animated series and in the comics, he's able to even talk to computer, to alien and artificial intelligence computers or equipment. And he also can open like boom tubes and portals that can transport you to different places, even in outer space and things like that, like different planets and whatnot. Now, the concept of cyborg is not necessarily a new thing nor a fantasy thing. It refers to cybernetic biological organism, and it is defined as a person, or in my opinion, any other biological living creature whose biological, I would say, living or sentient creature whose physiological functions are aided by or dependent upon mechanical or electronic devices. And many can argue that cyborgs then may have existed ever since we started using technology. And by technology, I do not mean a computerized device, but a mechanical device to be able to survive. Think of a wooden leg that someone somehow carved with a knife, or just put a stick attached to the legs or to what was remained of a leg when we lost a leg, so that we could just walk and just keep surviving. Now, pretty much like the concept of cyborg is the concept of transhumanism, right? Or the idea that humans and technology can merge for the betterment and the perpetuation of humanity, whatever that may be, all right? One more time, think of Cyborg, right? This character who was merged with technology and mechanical devices in a way that he could survive. Of course, you know, he became a superhero and all that. But what caused this merging was for him to survive, for this character to survive. And many would argue that transhumanism is nothing new either, right? In fact, I guess you can say that a cyborg is a transhumanist. And transhumanism, many would argue that have existed ever since cavemen picked up a stone and used it, right? Not necessarily for general physiological functions like walking or being able to reach farther or not, but even to defend ourselves, to catch food, to even communicate, right, and write in walls and all that with chalk or any other stone that allows you to, you know, mark the walls and whatnot. And then from there, from there in that moment, the stone was technology, right? And technology, again, we're not talking about cell phones and computers and all that. I guess sometimes we get so into technology, advanced technology or contemporary technology, I would say, that we think of what we have in front of us as the only technology, right? But technology is defined as the use of an external thing or any external thing that can help us improve our functions and survival, or chances of survival. So one more time, going back, then a stick would be technology. Fire was technology, even though we didn't invent fire in general. It was something that had already happened naturally. We were able to start to control it and manipulate it in ways that we can either cook or catch food or defend ourselves and whatnot, or even create other technology. Now, before you get scared, I would say that transhumanism is not necessarily about becoming cyborgs, right? Although it might well be the case, since, for example, using just one mechanical thing in our body then maybe turn us into a cyborg. But as mentioned before, about merging technology with us so that we can live better and longer, okay? And bringing it more to an actual reality, without thinking of a far future in which we can fly and have superpowers and whatnot, think of being able to buy a synthetic or cybernetic heart, right, in which that is custom made and that doesn't require for you to be part of a waiting list when your heart starts failing, or an implant chip, or implant a chip in your spinal cord so that you can stop having Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. Or what about losing a hand or an arm and being able to get a new one that is stronger and that allows you to experience the sensation when you touch your loved ones again, right? And the thing is that these technologies already exist, and some of them are even being used by, hey, humans, by us, right? You go through a procedure and you get something, you get a new hip, you get a piece of metal in your leg to allow you to keep walking. Or there are people who are having implanted hearing aids to be able to listen. People who are not being able to see, they have implants in where their eyes are so that they can see. And that is somehow merged this technology with their neural pathways so that they can view the images that we normally see with our eyes. So this is nothing necessarily new or nothing that is not happening. I guess the issue here is that they're not necessarily accessible to everybody, right? One, they're expensive, and at least here in the United States, well, depending on the state you are, if either a religion or a political view is much more dominant, then these things tend to be a little more, shunned. And sort of ignored and seen as inhuman or seen as immoral, okay? But I guess that these technologies, again, already exist, and we will keep inventing technology, and technology is a beautiful thing. And in fact, without technology, I can argue that we wouldn't have been able to evolve to where we are right now. I guess what needs to happen is the acceptance that perhaps we need to embrace it even more, and that being human maybe is not about being a biological sentient being, and more about how we as a species adapt to change and go into the future. Okay, my conversation today is with the transhumanist himself. His name is Zoltán István. Zoltán István, he is a journalist, a futurist, author of many articles, and author of a fiction titled The Transhumanist Wager. He's also a politician who represents the Transhumanist Party. And his goal in politics, or one of his goals in politics, is to bring science, technology, and health all together, merge them all together, pretty much like he tries to merge humans and machines, as the main purpose of a political U.S., system with the objective of implementing like new educational, legal, cultural, medical policies and procedures that allow transhumanism to be, let's say, accepted more into society and to merge not just with our human practices but also beliefs in a healthy and intuitive way. The conversation was pretty fascinating, I think. One of the most interesting ones, not that the prior ones were not interesting, but one of the most interesting ones, in my case, having been a physical educator and me exploring how we have evolved and have adapted to environments and how we have created physical capabilities and and even social capabilities to be able to survive in this physical world, I think transhumanism has a lot to offer. And again, we should not necessarily be scared of it. We should maybe embrace technology, and we've got to stop thinking about how Hollywood present things and more about practical things, such as maybe getting a new hand when I break one, or being able to get a new heart or a new pair of lungs. I hope this conversation is of value and relevance to you, as well as of your enjoyment, in that specific order: value, or valuable, relevant, and then enjoying. Okay, so ready, set, go.
Yeah, I hear you perfectly.
Awesome, perfect. All right, so yeah. Again, thank you for your time, and I think it will be very, very fascinating learning about transhumanism and how it will influence education and health and well, I guess evolution, if we could call it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really is. It's accelerated evolution by science and technology, and you know, just for your listeners who don't know, transhumanism like basically means beyond human, and it's using radical science and technology to modify the human being, and you know, can be anything from nanobots inside your brain to robotic arms to even, you know, simple things like driverless cars, which some people are starting to have in the United States now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've seen that, but there's been a few accidents and all that, but I think, you know, the more data and information is being recorded and then, you know, fixing the issues and whatnot, it would get better.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, anytime there's an accident, the media makes a big, you know, hoopla about it. But the reality is that the driverless cars so far, according to the statistics, have accidents about 90% less than human drivers.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Well, I mean, we're bad drivers, and I guess much more with even technology being a big aspect of transhumanism. I think the way we're using technology right now is not necessarily the way, at least the I would say regular population, not necessarily scientists. But you know, like text and drive, and you know, focusing on the GPS and not necessarily on the road and things like that, and it makes us even worse.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's really the benefit of technology, is that we get to leave a lot of the responsibility of living and just going about our day-to-day business in the hands of machines, while we can then focus as human beings on the bigger picture. And I mean, who doesn't want to commute to work an hour, instead read the paper or catch up on some emails or something like that, or just, you know, sleep, whatever it is. And that's going to be the great benefit. And it's just not, of course, driverless cars. It's everything. It's anything around you, your cell phone, the new types of planes coming out, you know, I mean, robotic nannies, everywhere, and everything that you look at has microchips built into it. And it's all part of this same kind of thrust to change humanity into something that's, you know, much more like transhumanity, you know, a modified version of the human being with all sorts of tech, essentially, you know, guiding our lives.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be super fun. I'm a geek. I'm a reader, and I mean, I'm all in for Matrix type of learning. You know, put a jump drive in my head and let's learn something new right away.
But that's going to come. I live in California. There's two major companies now, and there's probably a bunch of startups that are working on brainwave implants that hopefully would allow us to some extent download information, or at least upload information as well. And, you know, I have two kids, an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, two daughters, and I'm not positive that either of them are ever going to go to college, because, you know, there's a shot that there's a chance that maybe by then they will have these implants or these headsets that actually transfer this type of knowledge directly into your brain. And if you can transfer that, then there's no reason to really end up going across the country and paying all the money for school when you can just download something like that, and then you're connected directly into the cloud. Well, like I said, I mean, there are, you know, thousands of scientists literally working on this technology right now, and they're having a lot of success. Not the kind of success where we can download, let's say, algebra into our brains, But certainly there's, for example, drone races in Florida that are mind controlled and things like that. And, you know, that's a lot of that stuff's already here. It's just about making it commercially available and making it useful in kind of layperson terms.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's interesting. I live in Florida. I want to check the drone thing and see if I can see that.
Yeah. It's mind controlled drone races. So, you know, that's kind of the new thing, is not just drone racing, but controlling drones with your brain using these headsets. So check it out.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Before we go deeper into the conversation, I have a question. I have a few questions. I guess we can just ask, and then we can just tangentially speak however it comes. As I said, there's no script, so we can just go from one point and just fall in the other, however it happens. When did that concept came to be, like transhumanism? When did that start?
Sure. Well, transhumanism, you know, essentially started around the 90s. Philosophers started talking about, let us radically modify the human body with science and technology, given the fact that science and technology had started to really, like, because of microprocessors, computers, and things like that, really come, you know, change the way humans do business and stuff. But it's really only in the last 5 years when we've, you know, had smartphones and all sorts of gadgets and drones and AI and, you know, driverless cars, that we've really kind of come to what we can call, I'm not saying we're in the transhumanist stage, but we're now at the doorstep of it. And it's not just technology, it's also genetic editing.
Oh.
It's all the different bionic organs that we put into people. It's the different types of apparatuses that we can use to get disabled out of wheelchairs and exoskeleton suits and endoskeleton limbs and stuff like that. So we're coming just to this age when really we're starting to merge with a lot of synthetic things, including synthetic biologies. And that's really, you know, where transhumanism is. But really, I think it had its first philosophical start in the 90s when people started really talking about it, like Wired magazine.
Okay. Well, I guess if you put it that way, then I guess transhumanism has been even for a longer time. Like when we started using like wooden legs, you know, I broke a leg, somebody caught it and I put a wooden leg.
Oh, of course. You know, and some people would say, well, transhumanism began when the first primate picked up a rock and made an axe out of it, that it's all based on tools, you know, and you can, I think, you know, everyone has a different version of what it means, you know, and transhumanist's number one goal is to overcome death with science and technology. And I think the second one is to start really merging with machines. And, you know, any either of those concepts will probably start taking place over the next 10, 20, or 30 years. There's a good chance through some type of genetic enhancements, we'll start to be able to control aging dramatically more over the next 15 years.
That sounds super cool. You just answered my next question. So in politics, you're involved in politics, right? You ran for presidency in 2016?
Yeah, so I was the presidential nominee of the Transhumanist Party in 2016, and I was also the endorsed candidate of the Libertarian Party in California when I ran for governor in 2018. And I'm not sure if I'm going to run in 2020, but I have become sort of known as this perennial candidate that's pushing forth a kind of a science candidate, pushing forth ideas of science and technology, whereas, of course, most politicians, you know, pretty much speak on taxes and, you know, jobs and things like that, where I really try to speak about science and technology and how that can change the political world.
Okay. I saw you have a picture in your website that says putting science and health and technology, you know, in the forefront of American politics. But if you look at politics, I think it's going the opposite way. At least the majority, right? Religion being a big part of politics and people who are not necessarily, I would say, believers in how technology and science have helped us, you know, get where we are.
Well, you know, I think, you know, let's just be honest that 75% of Americans believe in, you know, kind of a Christian concept of a God. And so a lot of their cultural beliefs and philosophical beliefs are sort of determined by that. Whereas transhumanists are, you know, pretty much secular, and not all of them, some are certainly believers, but they're really not concerned with, you know, an afterlife. They're concerned with making the most of this life and of not dying. And that's a very kind of challenging, you know, concept to a lot of believers and Christians out there, because, you know, here we want to make transhumanists want to make human beings into godlike creatures, Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, Christians want to remain what they are, be good people, and be able to go to heaven through just being a good soul. So yeah, there is a little bit of a divide there, and it runs into a lot of issues as transhumanism grows into sort of a mainstream movement, and it is growing into a mainstream movement. However, you know, whether that continues to be a clash, I'm not sure. I think personally, I think a lot of Christians will start embracing radical science as maybe a measure of God, you know, God's gifts to them, because uh-huh. it's really hard to go against science. Science just makes so much sense.
Exactly. Well, I'm always saying that science is not necessarily a spooky thing in the air. It's just the way we study things and understand things and create things for the betterment of humanity. So when I talk to, I'm not necessarily a religious person, but when I talk with religious people and they're, well, you believe in science and whatever, I say, well, you use it. You're using a cell phone. You're using glasses. You're using, you know, clothes or a car or things like that. So it's just that we've found a way to study things and make sense of it and say, hey, what if I come up with something that makes it better?
Well, and that's really, I think a lot of the disagreement between science and religion comes down to kind of the core parts of the belief system, which is, you know, religious people ultimately put their ideas into faith,
mm-hmm.
And scientists ultimately put their ideas into logic, and it's very hard to reconcile that two. However, in order to feed ourselves, in order to eat, in order to drive from point A to point B and to raise a child, we all need to use logic. And so I think ultimately, it's just because you embrace science doesn't mean you're giving up the mystery of the world. In fact, maybe by embracing science, you'll come much closer to God eventually. And then this is what I say again to many Christians when I meet them either on the campaign trail and they question my beliefs. I just say, you know, if you really believe in God, then all these radical science and technology miracles we're having are simply just the work, the greater work of God that we're just discovering. If you want to look at it like that, that's perfectly okay with me. And then they start to see in a little bit more of an open mind and more accepting of it. And I think ultimately in the future, this is what's going to happen, is there might be very many religious people out there, and they'll keep a part of their faith that's very close to them and faith bound, but they'll be more open-minded about how maybe God's works
mm-hmm.
actually occur in their lives. And while I still remain secular, I'm happy to, you know, I'm open-minded enough to know that, first off, A, I could be wrong. Maybe there really is a God. And second off, you know, it doesn't really matter how we get to the transhumanist age and we live better and longer through science and technology. All that really matters is that we get there.
True. True, true. I guess, I don't know, but I read a lot, and I've come to my own conclusion that both science and religion can coexist. Even though I'm not religious, I can say, for example, my best friend is a religious person, and I'm not, and we're like, you know, skin and nail. It's just a matter of being open to conversations, right?
Totally. And I think that for me is, you know, I used to, during my campaigns, I've kind of campaigned pretty hard as an atheist, but as mm-hmm. I've grown more popular, I suppose, and more of a public figure, I've lessened that because it just doesn't do me any benefit to campaign so hard on secularism. It does me a lot more benefit to actually campaign on being open-minded and being mm-hmm. Opening my arms to all sorts of ideas with the same goal in mind. Let us get to the future as quickly as possible, because the future is better. It's healthier. People live longer and all these other things, and it's going to be more fun. So, you know, for me, it's really just a philosophical switch. Like, anyone can join us in the transhumanist world. It doesn't matter how we get there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess at some point the issue with transhumanism, and it's not going to be transhumanism is not going to be the issue. I think the issue is accessibility to it, right? I guess in the beginning, just like most technologies, is, you know, who can pay for it is the one who can take it, right? Who can have access to the best parts or whatever.
Well, yeah. So, and, you know, I think the number one questions I really get asked about transhumanism is, okay, Zoltan, a lot of this sounds really nice and great. We'd all like these great, you know, inventions and stuff, but are the rich going to get it first, and are they going to share it with the rest of the universe? And the idea is, well, let's hope they will. And, you know, as a political candidate, even though I might have sometimes some very kind of libertarian-esque or even fiscally conservative ideas, I kind of stand behind a lot of ideas that are sort of left-leaning, that say we must make sure all these technologies get shared totally across the spectrum, because the last thing I want to happen is the transhumanist movement becomes some kind of dystopian movement where only the rich benefit and the poor, or just even the middle classes, do not. So I think even if it requires maybe government mandates, whatever, if, like, let's say life extension, science, whatnot, we need to make sure that all, you know, all people, all different types of classes, society, whatnot, are represented, have equal access to these types of technologies, and can get to it. Because the last thing we want is a bunch of super rich people with super godlike powers, and the rest of us don't have it. That would be a disaster. So even if I would, regardless of my political affiliations, I stand behind equality when it comes to transhumanism and trying to create policy that would make sure that equality happens.
Yeah, it's I don't know if you've seen it, the Netflix show Altered Carbon.
Yes, I have seen it.
Very, very interesting, and it presents that notion, right? That the ultra rich have the best thing. They have the, you know, like, more bodies, or they can have the best bodies, or they can have as many discs of their consciousness as they want. And then you have the rest of the people, you know, living down there, and of course, I guess if it's a legitimate worry, if you are into transhumanism, or it should be a legitimate worry anyways.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a very legitimate worry. And I, like I said, it's really the first question I get asked on a campaign trail or whatever I'm doing, is this idea of equality. Because I think, you know, with the growing problem of inequality happening right now in most Western countries, a lot of people, it's on a lot of people's minds. And then they're seeing these radical technologies come through, and they're like, well, you know, great, but what do I care about transhumanism unless I actually get the benefit from it? And that's why I think, as somebody who speaks about and advocates for it, we really need to make sure that it's available to everyone and that it benefits all of society, because otherwise we create this kind of dystopian nightmare that is very similar to what you see in the Hollywood films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, I guess, when you Hollywoodize things, it creates a distorted version of the reality. So, but at some point, and in many cases, it happened before, like, the rich get, you know, the best things of something, like the best, for example, right now, you can say the who can afford the best medical treatment, then, you know, have the better chances of survival. Let's just put it that way. But yeah. that's of course sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, you're right. I mean, people that are wealthier live longer. People that have more money can get out of different kind of legal situations that poor people can't. And, people that have more money just simply have access to the types of education and other types of things. So it's already a somewhat unfair system. I think as long as there's capitalism built into it, and, you know, government's making sure that the capitalism is sort of fair, then that's okay. But we just need to be very careful, because when you start talking about either genetically modified people, you know, let's say China, for example, is leading the charge on augmenting intelligence. Let's say an entire generation of Chinese babies comes out with an IQ of 140 because they were able to modify it at birth, or, you know, pre-birth. And America, with this kind of conservative government, chose not to do that. And then we have to compete against the same, you know, same entrance exams, same colleges, same tests, same jobs. There's no way we're going to be able to beat them. They're going to just be simply hardwired better than us. So we need to make sure that whatever happens to the species, it happens to all humans everywhere. And while there might be some lag time, you know, 5-10 years here, whatever, I understand, because that's sort of the way capitalism has worked. The trickle-down effect is incredibly important in this case. We need to make sure that everybody at some point, very, you know, soon after something comes out, has access to it. So it's not like just the rich really thrive.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, I'm a former teacher of physical education, and I'm a physical educator, right? I'm a personal physical educator, and I work with people, you know, getting healthier and better, athletes, older people, kids and whatnot. And I've been playing with this concept of integrated physical education, right? And it is a way to integrate many, many things or many practices, I would say, to help people understand human movement better, right? Because I found lately that we have more gyms. Yes, we have more, I don't know, CrossFits and yoga and types of yoga. You have goat yoga everywhere now and things like that. But with the fundamental movements of humans, many people are moving less. More people are having more back pain, more knee issues that are caused by these practices. So I try to educate people. I don't know. I would say again, physical education. And I base that on something that I call, like I just made it up. It's, well, I didn't just made it up. I've been thinking about it for a while. It's organismic physical education, right? That every organism needs to go through a process of physical education in order to interact with the environment, right? Individually and then socially. Will transhumanism end that? Like you don't understand. For example, right now, if I get a new leg, I still need to learn how to deal with it, right? Its movement, its weight, its material, the limits and whatnot. Will there be a point in which that wouldn't matter at all?
You know, that's a very tough question. The answer is, well, the answer, I think, 100% is yes, there will be a point when it doesn't matter for sure, because we will just upload matrix style all this information. We'll know how to do it. But I mean, I think we're pretty far away from that. We may be as far as 60, 70, 80 years from that. So I think anyone living now or even anyone young still going to have to assimilate whatever new technologies they come through their brain and through their human understanding. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of learning and you know, and expertise to be gained just by learning something new when you're given these transhumanist technologies. Like, you know, I'm on a volunteer list, for example, to get a brain implant. And it would be, you know, some of the first ones that are directly communicating to artificial intelligence. Now, I know from what the engineers I spoke with that this would take some time to figure out. It's not like you just turn it on and all of a sudden you're able to talk to a rudimentary AI, you know, get all these answers through, and not talk, but your brain can communicate directly by thinking it. Okay, it's something that you're going to have to test it. You know, you're going to have to do this. It could take even 6 months or 12 months before you get really good at the communication. When you put on some of these, you know, new headsets to control like a drone with your brain, you know, it takes a while to train your brain how to know left, how to know right, how to know forward, yeah, how to know backwards. So I think anything we get, we're going to have to learn, especially whether it's a new leg, a new robotic leg, or it's a brain implant.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I call, I would say evolutionary physical education, right? The capacity to adapt to whatever comes that is new. When it comes to education, one of the things that I try to explore is, I think we're living in a very, in a system in which the educational system is very either archaic or it's not what we need. I think things are failing, in my opinion, having my experience as a teacher. We're not creating critical thinkers, right? We're just, well, we'll Google it or YouTube it and that's it. You don't have to process and reason and things like that. And then, for example, if you go to school right now, well, to some schools, I wouldn't say all, you ask a question and they're like, well, I don't know. Whereas when I grew up, you know, you had to read and process things and you create some sort of critical thinking way to understand the world. How will transhumanism work in that aspect?
Well, you know, that's tough because, you know, we're faced with this dilemma with even education. I speak about it a lot. I have two young kids, a 5- and 8-year-old, and, you know, will they go to college? There's a possibility they may not. Or there's mm-hmm. definitely a possibility they won't go to graduate school. I think that's more realistic. And will you be able to upload education? And will that diminish what it means to learn something? Probably not. I think learning is probably just a simple, you know, it's probably electrical signals in your brain that convince you that, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, and that's a very important thing to know. And, or, you know, like if you run across a rattlesnake and a rattlesnake strikes at you, you must, you know, avoid it. Okay, there's instincts for that. But maybe there's other things that are not so instinct bound that you would want to know, and you learn them, and they stick with you. I think once we're able to upload this stuff, it's going to be just as real as the real experience. And so that's going to present a real challenge because we might have an entire generation of kids with no real discipline. But maybe you can even upload discipline. Maybe that's the whole other thing. You can upload discipline. You can upload self-control. You know, you can upload a perseverance. You can upload integrity. And you know, there's actually a lot of really good studies out there that have said, you know, certain good people, certain altruistic people have it genetically built into them. They've always been like that. They tend to think in terms of, I care more about the tribe than I do myself. And some of the greatest innovators happen to be some of the biggest selfish people in the world, where they're just like, they only think about themselves all day long. And yet that's what has made them very good at coming up with radical new ideas. So I think whatever we choose to download will be just as authentic as what we can learn, maybe even more so. And that will definitely change the future of education. Whether that's good or bad, that's a whole different animal. But I do think it's going to be incredibly effective.
Yeah, I guess, well, laws will have to change. You know, social rules will have to change. Political systems will have to change. And I guess belief systems and almost everything will have to change.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're talking about system-wide institutional change, especially on a legal basis, because everything that we once knew is now very, very different. Everybody is as smart as Einstein or who has access to it, you know, and, you know, this is, again, where you get back to sort of this, what's equality and can you make these things equal? Is downloading a Harvard education the same thing as downloading a state school education or something? And, you know, these are questions to be answered by people and the governments in the future.
Yeah, I guess what, you know, we wouldn't want a criminal killing people out there and, you know, knowing all of the legal tricks to just figure out how to get out of jail and just keep doing it and just, you know, living forever or something like that. So,
I hope, you know, I'm hoping like in that case, I'm hoping, for example, crime, because there's going to be so much technology. If you can download information, you could download all the different legal things, like maybe an AI would already be following you. And okay, so that brings up this whole issue of privacy. You know, despite what, you know, my love of technology, I'm actually also somebody who advocates, and this is controversial, that giving up privacy could be a very good thing in terms of safety of society. It turns out that a lot of our version of privacy is actually things that hold us back. We don't want people to know what we're doing. We're constantly on guard against people knowing too much about us. But if we had unlimited freedom and unlimited transparency, both in ourselves and also in the government, we might find ourselves a society that has much less crime and much better ability to stop crime for what we did have. So, you know, I'm hoping by the time we can upload and download information, by then it'll be, everything will be so trackable that, you know, even if somebody did try to do something bad, we would be able to get them right away or hopefully catch them ahead of time, because we're now living in a world where kind of 24/7. Systems understand where you're at. Hopefully it's not like people are watching me in my bedroom. That's not the kind of lack of privacy I'm advocating for. But I think the idea where crime, a lot of crime is committed in the dark shadows, or, you know, we would be able to stop that. And we might be able to do that through a lot of radical technologies.
Yeah. I guess as psychological neurology, for example, advances and, you know, people learn, or psychologists learn how to figure out, you know, sociopaths and psychopaths and behaviors that may lead to certain other, you know, bad behaviors, then they would learn different techniques and whatnot. And I guess with technology later on, it will be even better.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the world will get safer. I think the world will get better. The big problem is the world might get more boring. But for those of us who have families and, you know, children and whatnot, boring is not a bad thing. When you know, my two daughters, all I want is a standard day. Kids go to school, kids learn, kids come home, eat well, go to sleep early, and are happy. And, you know, I think at the core of it, that's really what a lot of, you know, the next generation is hoping to, you know, we're trying to give to them, is good, stable, healthy lives. Look, the world, the history of the world has been war after war after world war after war, and disease and plague and whatnot, and extinction and things like that. So what I'm trying to do a lot with transhumanism is make the world a place that has dramatically less suffering. People don't die nearly as frequently, and they can live much longer. Families can stay bound together. Loved ones don't get lost. And the world's generally a safer and better place. I understand that that might not be the most exciting world, but for those of us who have those that we love, that's the best. Because when we love somebody, you just want to protect them and make sure that they're happy.
Yeah. Well, and I guess, you know, with the advance of again, technology and astrophysics and things like that, we have a whole universe to figure out. So I don't necessarily think it's going to get boring
You're right. No, and that's the whole other thing. Life on Earth may get boring for those that hang out. But I mean, as soon as you get off world, that's when the craziness starts happening and you're in these bionic bodies and you get to go to the next solar system and maybe discover alien species and whatnot and, you know, big black holes. So, I mean, it's not like, especially if you're connected to AI and your brain is now a million times smarter because you're drifting in the clouds. I mean, it's not really ever going to get boring. But I do try to tell people that the real transhuman future could be very nice, just very simple. You get to live with your loved ones for as long as you like. But, you know, for people like me, what I'm really probably going to do is be an explorer. I'm going to leave planet Earth and go off as soon as I can and discover the brand new worlds that await. Because I think the most common staple of transhumanists is their adventure, or their sense of curiosity. We really want to see how far we can take the human species.
True. Nice. Well, we're hitting the 30-minute mark, so I'm going to let you go. I know you're a busy person. Thank you for your time, Sultan. And I will just, when I post it, I will share it with you so you can share it around with your friends.
Absolutely. I'll definitely share it around. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation. And I wish you all the best with the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. Bye.